Hey everyone, welcome in to another edition of the Woj Pod. My guest is Gary Parrish of CBS Sports, the host of the Ion Basketball podcast and one of the preeminent voices in all of college basketball. Gary and I discuss the scandal that has rocked college basketball and has its tentacles in the high school game and certainly even the NBA, what it means for the future of the basketball industry from the shoe companies, big-time college coaches, players, and even the NBA. We talk about Rick Pitino and his legacy now and his future as a coach. So let's get to my conversation with Gary Parrish. Welcome to Gary Parrish, who's on the line from Memphis. Gary, how are you, man?
Everything's good. It's been a busier week than I anticipated, as you know, in college basketball. Last week of September is typically slow, but not in the year 2017 for reasons that have been well documented at this point.
This entire scandal, which its tentacles, you know, the thing about basketball, and you know this, coming up as a beat writer covering John Calipari at Memphis and then becoming a national guy at CBS Sports and covering the biggest guys in the country, that more than I think any other sport, the high school, college, and pro game are so intertwined that you pull a string on one and you're impacting the other. But I don't know that there's been a story that crossed, you know, really the grassroots, college, and then NBA the way this one maybe has already and then has the potential to. There's just never been anything like this.
There has never been anything like this because the FBI has never been involved in trying to expose the so-called underbelly of basketball. And I say basketball because it is high school basketball and college basketball and to some extent the NBA, because some of the characters who are involved at the grassroots level are also involved at the professional level. And the reason, and you're exactly right, that, you know, no other sport is so intertwined from the high school level to the college level to the professional level like basketball. The reason is because you can literally go from one to the next in a 3-year span. You can be high school 1 year, college the next, NBA multimillionaire the next. The other reason is because, let's just talk about the number one player and the number one prospect in the world right now, who's not yet a professional, Marvin Bagley. He's at Duke, obviously projected to be among the top picks in the 2018 NBA draft, could certainly go number one overall. I've known who Marvin Bagley is since he was 15 years old. My point being this, in football, you can't identify who the future multimillionaires are going to be when they're 15 years old, 16 years old. And even then, they're not going to be multimillionaires, even if they make it, until after their junior year of college. You can identify the basketball players, and they can be multimillionaires after 1 year of college. And that's why the shoe companies, or at least it's among the reasons why the shoe companies and the agents are dabbling in grassroots basketball, because they're really, if you want to break it down from a business perspective, they're really just making investments, business investments that often pay off.
And that's the thing, Gary, the fallout on this, the potential impact on the sneaker industry, which influences everything. I mean, like the book Dan Wetzel wrote, like Soul Influence 15 years ago, which kind of came after, you know, Raw Recruits with Alex Wolf and Armie Katayan and Dan's book, and then, you know, you've written and talked so much about this through the years, that the influence the shoe companies have on everything. What I wonder now, and what a lot of people in the industry are asking, do Nike and Adidas look at this model, this grassroots model of pouring money and now opening themselves up to potentially to criminally, is this model sustainable? Have we seen the end of the shoe companies at the high school level?
I mean, maybe, because I think if you're Nike or Adidas or Under Armour or some international apparel company, you have to ask yourself a reasonable question, which is, like, is this worth it? And I don't mean worth it, like, because the amount of money they pour into grassroots basketball, like, is pennies, relatively speaking. It's not that big of a deal.
These are global, these are global conglomerates now. Like, they're so much bigger than basketball. And is this worth the damage they're doing to themselves in a lot of other ways?
Because, I mean, here's the truth. Like, I know that they're trying to move shoes at the grassroots level and that having the best 16-year-old from, say, Philadelphia might help them sell Adidas or Nike or Under Armour in Philadelphia to other 16-year-olds. I got that. But the big payoff comes when you end up with Kevin Durant or LeBron James or Steph Curry or somebody like that. And the truth is, you and I have talked about this before, and I've talked about this with Sonny Vaccaro before. You can develop whatever relationship you want to develop with the kid when he's 15, 16, 17, have great relationships with his family, guide him to a Adidas school, Nike school, whatever. The truth is, when you get ready to sign him as a professional athlete, most guys do something very simple. They take the best deal. So, like, if it's the most money from Adidas, they take an Adidas deal. If it's the most money from Under Armour, they take an Under Armour deal. If it's the most money from Nike, they take a Nike deal. And I don't think that will ever change. What might prevent them from pulling that out of it completely, though, would be this. The Adidas executive, who is, like, caught up in this, was arrested Tuesday. His voice is all over wiretaps. He is recorded explaining at one point that they have a $160 million deal with the Louisville Athletic Department, and so it is in their best business interest to make sure Louisville stays good. And the best way to make sure Louisville stays good is to make sure Louisville gets five-star prospects, and that is the root of them wanting to help Louisville get Brian Bowen, a top 30 kid, five-star prospect, and so they funnel, allegedly $100,000 to his family. So if you think of it in these terms, if you're going to invest $160 million in an athletic department, what is another $100,000 to make sure it has good players? I'm not sure that ever goes away, but certainly everything's been rocked this week.
What you're hearing a lot of now, Gary, from people is, well, to me, these are two different questions. The amateur model, should the players be paid? We know the answer to that. But this idea, though, that if you pay the players, many of these problems would go away, and I don't accept it for a moment, because let's say we decide that they're going to pay the players $10,000 each, $25,000, like whatever the number would be beyond a stipend. At the end of the day, it doesn't change this. Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke, Louisville, UCLA, they are putting a recruiting class together this year. They are trying to get the best player, and they're competing for the best player. So, and I'm just throwing those names out. I'm not saying any of them are involved in this, but so, like, hypothetically, if a kid's going to get 15, 20, 25, 30,000, whatever it would be from a college, okay, now I'll get 135,000 because I'll take the,
right.
It doesn't change the supply and demand. It doesn't change the fact that agents, financial planners, runners, just because somebody is being compensated another way, it doesn't change the marketplace. So we can say, it would be fair, it would be just and right that all this television money, all the revenue that comes in, part of it belongs to the players in salary terms. We can agree on that. But I think the idea that that's going to make the corruption go away, it isn't.
No, and I agree with that. And it's why I've never been a proponent of these student athletes across the board. You know, every football player needs $15,000 or $25,000, whatever the number is. You're exactly right. You can't get it to a place where, I mean, what we know because it's caught on wiretaps, Brian Bowen, who's just a guy. I mean, he's a five-star prospect, but he's not Lonzo Ball. He was worth $100,000 to somebody. There are agents and shoe company executives discussing another prospect, top 10 kid class of 2019, I believe, and they're talking about $150,000, $200,000 for him. So that's the market value, apparently. We're talking six figures here. So you can give a basketball player $50,000. It ain't going to stop a top 10 kid from getting an extra $100 on top of that or whatever. My proposed model has always been this. Allow people to take whatever they can get, fair market value, just like the Olympics. You know, once upon a time, the Olympics was tied to amateurism as well. And they finally opened it up and they said, Michael Phelps, go get whatever you can get. Katie Ledecky, go get whatever you can get. And so what I've always been, not always, I don't want to act like I've been screaming about this for 25 years, but like certainly in the past 5-6 years, my point has always been open it up. And that means if Nike wants to give Marvin Bagley $500,000 and then guide him to Duke, fine, whatever. That's what they think he's worth. On a lower level, if a car dealership in Tuscaloosa wants to give an Alabama quarterback, $800,000 to be on billboards, fine, let them take it. In other words, some people would get a lot, some would get a little, some would get nothing. And I mean this in every sport. So, like, a swimmer might not get anything other than scholarship and stipend. But Katie Ledecky, on the other hand, might get millions because she's an Olympic gold medalist. And once you do that, it is true. I acknowledge up front that the biggest schools with the biggest shoe company deals and the most intense fan bases with the biggest boosters would have inherent recruiting advantages. They would be able to essentially buy who they want. Guess what? That's already what happens. The biggest schools already get the best players. You don't think Alabama's got a recruiting advantage over Alabama State when it comes to football, or Memphis has a recruiting advantage over Middle Tennessee when it comes to basketball? Of course they do. And so here's what I've always said. What that would do is take the responsibility out of the universities. They don't have to come out of their budgets at all. They're not paying anybody other than what they're doing right now, scholarship and stipend. And then everybody, because when people say we got to pay student athletes, they don't really mean all. They just mean the ones that have value. Well, this allows the ones who have value to get whatever it is the market says they're worth. And guess what? We could look at the recruiting rankings for the next 10 years, football and basketball, which are the sports the only sports people really care about when it comes to this conversation. And the recruiting rankings would look exactly the way they look right now. Duke and Kentucky and the schools that get the best basketball prospects would keep getting them. Alabama and Ohio State and the schools that get the best football prospects would keep getting them. And then guess what? Everything we're talking about now is suddenly not a scandal because it's not against anybody's rule. You wouldn't have agents having to work backdoor deals. If family wanted to reach an agreement with an agent for their top 10 prospect when he's a junior in high school, let them do it. Doesn't matter. Teenagers in Hollywood have agents. Why couldn't basketball players?
And make those binding agreements versus now, where a player or family can be taking money from multiple agents, make it a binding agreement. You're locked in, and you don't have 10 other guys coming at you all the time because you've got your, you know, you've got your hand out in every direction. And so it would simplify things, but I don't think is this the tipping point that allows that floodgate to open? I think probably. Well, it'll be based on maybe how many indictments. I don't see them ever accepting. They won't accept this. Yeah.
Well, and here's why. Because right now, all the car dealership money or the Nike money or the FedEx money, like all these entities that would be influencing prospects and compensating them, right now all that money goes to the university. The Nike money goes straight to the university. The FedEx money goes straight to the university. Just the multimillionaire booster money goes straight to the university. Now that would be going straight to the players, and it would cost the university money. So the universities are never going to sign up for this. But it doesn't mean that the system wouldn't be better in general, because it just takes everything above board. We don't have to wonder why a McDonald's All-American signed with Western Kentucky. We would know exactly why. It would be like there would be a document saying that this person agreed to pay this person this amount of money to enroll at that school, and as long as he maintains his academic eligibility, he's going to play for this school, and this is the reason why. It cleans up the sport, because I get this question all the time. How do you clean up college basketball? You can't. It's like saying, how do you get people to stop getting arrested for marijuana possession? Legalize marijuana. It's the only way to do it. People like to smoke. So, like, you're never going to get this stuff out of it. You just have to legalize it, and then it's not a scandal anymore. Again, everything that's happened this week that we've become aware of because of the FBI investigation, every bit of it is tied to it happened simply because there is a market for these prospects, but there are rules in place that says they can't accept it. Everything goes under the table, and now here we are.
And in so many cases, that framework that you just described would do something that isn't always, maybe isn't even mostly being done now. When people talk about this player is getting paid XYZ, it's typically not the kid. It's not the player. It's not the young person profiting. It's the people around them. It's other family members. It's representatives of the family. It's coaches, travel teams, whoever it is. At least then there would be a structure where the money would go directly to the player, because I think right now, in a lot of cases, the young people themselves actually never profit. Like, they might get a small percentage of it. At least then it would open it up where the money would go to them and not just every handler or sycophant who surrounds them.
Yeah, let's just focus on what the FBI uncovered this week. Okay, you've got assistant coaches all over the country accepting money from financial advisors. Why? Because those financial advisors are led to believe, either accurately or inaccurately, that these assistant coaches have influence over the players. So when they turn pro, leave college, that assistant coach can funnel them to them. That is a federal crime because they are calling these assistant coaches public officials because they work for a public university. It is essentially bribery of a public official. Now, the interpretation is like lawyers are going to argue this, but the assistant coaches taking money from financial advisors is basically like a city councilman taking a bribe to do something. That's the way this is being interpreted at the federal level. Okay, what if we decide that, hey, if basketball players, even if in their teenage years, want to have financial advisors, it's okay. We're allowing them to do that. Well, guess what now? The financial advisors work directly with the family. It takes the assistant coaches or the AAU coaches or the, you know, any person who's trying to make a buck as a middleman, it takes them completely out of the equation. In what world is that not better and cleaner? You know, only in the NCAA world.
Hey, are you enjoying this podcast? Do you even maybe love this podcast? Well, did you know you can listen to it on Spotify while still enjoying your favorite tunes? It's easy. Just look for the podcast section within the browse tab on your mobile device or search for your favorite shows. To find more podcasts, head to spotify.com/podcast. I think there's a greater play here, maybe some greater forces at work that would like to see a system where you've seen the NBA set up. Jonathan Givody and I reported on this last year, and now and then the league announced it, and you're seeing these pop up all over the world. Australia, China, Africa, different places in the world where basketball is very either growing or already is super important and played, where they're creating academies for the best players to get pushed there to be in an academic environment, to have good coaching, nutrition, you know, all the things you'd want to help develop a young athlete, young person with. We don't have that here. Our power structure is around travel basketball, which is funded by the sneaker companies, which isn't necessarily the best basketball training. There's no qualifications to really be a travel coach other than you have access to players and sneaker money. And usually if you get access to players, sneaker money comes after it. That I think the NBA and USA Basketball would love to see a situation where they can get a hold of this, and the NBA sees it as a way to have better developed young people, more fundamentally sound players come through in the system. And USA Basketball has done a lot with 16 and under teams, 17 and under teams. You know, they go to Colorado Springs. They make national teams, usually coached by college coaches, and they've gotten some influence with these young people. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't colleges who benefit from that either. But I do think there's a greater play here that if the sneaker companies pulled out of all the travel basketball and those guys lost their money and lost their ability with kids, with that ability to bring kids into their program, fly them all over the country, does that open up the NBA and USA Basketball to maybe have a greater control over the system than they do now?
It's the way it should be. I mean, like I said earlier, we can identify by and large the lottery picks, like when they're about 15, 16 years old. Like I remember going and watching O.J. Mayo when he was the best 13-year-old in the country. And then he went on to become a like top five pick. Whether he should have been or not, it's another story. But like the names don't really change. Guys don't usually just come out of nowhere. Like, I went back and looked, and not because I'm some draft expert, but just because, like, I have, you know, a Draft Express bookmarked, frankly. I mean, yeah, I went back and looked at the night of the 2016 NBA draft. I did a mock 2017 NBA draft. And the night of the 2017 NBA draft, the actual draft went basically the way we all thought it was going to go a year in advance. And so we can identify who these people are pretty accurately. And so why wouldn't we want to identify them, pull them out of, because by the time they're 15 and elite, 16 and elite, they are in the system. The financial advisors are making moves. The sneaker companies are making moves. Everybody's trying to pull them in different directions, transfer schools, change grassroots programs, go to a prep school, all this stuff. Why wouldn't we, if we can properly identify who these people are for the most part, put them into academies? They're going to be professional basketball players. We know that at the age of 16, those elite guys, they're going to play professionally. Maybe not all in the NBA, but most in the NBA. But either way, they're going to make a living playing basketball. Why don't we treat them the way European countries treat elite soccer prospects? You know, the idea that – just think of this for a second. What if Lionel Messi is identified at a young age, let's just say 15. I'm pretty sure he was identified much earlier than that. Let's just say at the age of 15, it became clear this guy is going to be a professional soccer player. And we said, okay, well, now then we're going to pay his father to start a summer soccer program and just get a bunch of other guys who never practice, and we'll just bounce them around the country in the entire month of July playing an event so that adults can make money off of them. And then we're going to send him to, like, some high school, but he might change some high school. And then we're going to put him in a university for a year, let him take an algebra class online, and then he can join Barcelona. You'd be like, what? Why would anybody do it that way? How about we recognize he's a soccer phenom? He's going to be a professional soccer player, and let's treat him as such. Like, why is Derrick Rose ever on a college campus? Why is Lonzo Ball ever on a college campus? We knew what Derrick Rose was going to be since he was 16 years old. Same thing with Lonzo. Same thing with Markelle Fultz. Same thing with all these guys. So, like, any system that recognizes that and then treats them properly is a system I'll sign up for.
If you look at this NBA model that they've developed here overseas, part of it, they understand that some of these kids from, let's say, Africa, from very modest means who come through their program, they understand many aren't going to make the NBA. In fact, most may not, because you're giving some opportunities in this setting to guys who show potential, but there's an education component to it. So, like, if a kid wants to, let's say they put a who goes through their program, gets in the draft, and doesn't make it, bounces in the D League and he's out, where there's a pool of money for them then to go to college. Or if they don't have a scholarship, if college isn't in the cards for them, where they haven't just been brought through it only to play basketball, that there's something else in it. There's a safety net there. And if you're going to bring guys through the program, I think that there's an ability to, you know, have some balance here to not just, you know, guys who don't make it then are back, you know, are just sent from where they came. There is an opportunity there, but the system, there's just got to be a fundamental change. And you said it, like, the colleges, universities, there's so much money for them to let go of that it's hard to imagine a scenario where these guys drop to their knees and say, okay, we know it's wrong. I think they're going to fight to the death on this thing to keep the status quo, because too many of them profit off of it.
Yeah, no, there's too much money being made. I mean, the truth is the system is flawed to its core. But when the system was created of tying basketball teams and football teams to institutions of higher learning, it wasn't a billion-dollar industry. But it is now. And yet the fundamental structure of the way they do things hasn't changed, even though the money has gone through the roof. And that is, it's a flaw that tinkering with it won't really change anything. The whole system needs to be blown up and redone. But the truth is, just like you said, there's too much money being made that the people who are making the money are the people who have the power to actually change it. And that means they have no motivation really to change it, because, you know, the people like money. I guess it's been that way forever.
Rick Pitino, who is on, you know, quote unquote, leave it, Louisville, he's been fired. There's sure. Just more the contractual language of like a 10-day waiting period. Usually when people leave in scandal, you know, in the end you remember them for the winning they did and the championships they won. With Pitino, though, I do really wonder if, because of how salacious his scandals were, how contrary to the public mythology that he created for himself, and nobody – there has never been a coach, well, you can count them on one hand maybe, very few, who created a perception, who wanted people to believe he was somebody else and worked so hard at perpetuating it. And I think with Pitino, it only makes it from the scandal with the woman in Louisville several years ago to literally having prostitutes on campus recruiting trips at Louisville to now just being on the telephone in these wiretaps, you know, flat out appearing to, allegedly here, right, appearing to cut a six-figure deal to get a player. I think that Patino's, and I don't know that he'll coach again in college. You never know, because sometimes if he's not quote-unquote named in anything, there's somebody who can technically hire him, and if he really wanted to work again, there's probably somebody who would hire him. It may not be a big enough level for Rick. But I just think the way people are going to remember him, I think, is it may end up being more for this than it was the winning, and he did do a lot of winning.
It's incredible because he did a whole bunch of winning. The only man to ever win national championships at two different universities. If he had never left for the NBA, like if he'd have just been a college coach from start to finish, like, say, Mike Krzyzewski, you know, Rick Pitino might be the all-time wins leader. Like, particularly if he just got that Kentucky job and never left it, you know, he'd have way more than two national championships, and he would he'd be up there with Kay, perhaps ahead of Kay in total wins. I mean, this is a Hall of Fame career, like literally, because he's inducted into the Nate's Memorial Hall of Fame. But it is a remarkable, like, top shelf, one of the all-time greats. I don't hesitate to use that label on him. He is one of the all-time greats and possibly the greatest college basketball coach of all time. And yet you're right. That's not really his story anymore. You know, people will remember him, you know, like if you ever did that name association game, right? I say a word, what pops into your head? If you say Patino, like, I don't think basketball is going to pop into people's head. Prostitute is going to pop into people's head. Yeah. Affair is going to pop into people's head. You know, sex in a restaurant is going to pop into people's head. The jokes will never go away. And, that's gotta be maddening for him. Self-inflicted, obviously, but still, to be so great and accomplished at something and yet not really have that be your story, as you enter the last years of he's 65 years old, so I think, he's in the twilight of his life, I guess. I mean, I don't think he's gonna live to be 140. So, like, the idea that you could be so good at something and yet have it completely overshadowed by these other things, I imagine must be just incredibly frustrating, but it doesn't make it untrue. Like, yeah, his Wikipedia page has all this stuff on it, and it's always going to be there. This stuff will always be a part of his story that overshadows what he actually accomplished on the basketball court.
I tweeted about it the other day. I talked a little bit on ESPN about it, about his potential or his ability to get back to the NBA. Now, he has tried in recent years to get back to the NBA. There's not been really any interest in him. And it's not so much from, of course he can coach in the NBA. Of course, as a tactician preparing a team, Rick Pitino could coach very well in the NBA. I think there's two things. It's one thing to get caught cheating in college, and if you were just in a scandal, if it was just being on the phone with $100,000 in a recruit, that wouldn't preclude somebody from hiring you. But this idea that people in the NBA don't care about character, that an organization wants him to be the representative of it, to be the front man, that in and of itself, I think is really, would be difficult because of, you know, the woman in the restaurant, you know, that scandal, and then, you know, the prostitutes on campus. He's synonymous with this sleaze, and the pro game has changed in a way that there was a time where in the colleges, they were hiring the emperor and making him, you know, making him a king in the NBA, giving him the president's title, player personnel control, and then he'd coach and make a lot of money. John Calipari, Rick Pitino. And the model you're seeing now and what looks to be the more successful model is Brad Stevens, Billy Donovan. These are not big ego guys. These are guys who work hand in hand with their general manager. They don't, you know, they have input but not power. And the NBA now, the power is with the general managers more than ever, less than the coaches. And nobody wants the idea of having a John Calipari, a Rick Pitino, who guys don't feel like they could be partners with, who they could work with, who they know in the end are about having that themselves and have never shown an inclination to cooperate. It's got to be about them. And I think as much as anything, that's as much why Rick and even John, you know, John could have gotten back in the NBA in Sacramento, but you know what? Like, the Kentucky job is a better job than the Kings job. It is.
Right. Yeah, like I think Rick would have an easier time getting a professional job than another college job, but I don't know that there's a desire, and you would obviously know this better than I, but is there a desire among NBA decision makers to bring Rick Pitino back into the NBA game? I doubt it. And then at the collegiate level, I'm with you, never say never. I mean, geez, Dave Bliss got a job, you know, after covering up, after trying to frame a murder victim as a drug dealer, just a despicable human.
Right,
who,
but he got back in at what, the NAIA level?
Yeah,
Rick Pitino's doing that. He's never doing that. There has to be a lot of money and prominence. He's not taking. Right. I mean, can you imagine him taking a job that doesn't just because he wants to cook? I just think all the other things matter so much to him. All the trimmings.
It would have to be a high profile job, or at least like a Power Five top job or a Big East job. And I don't see him. I don't see him getting that opportunity. I don't know how you, as a university president, and I say this as someone who personally likes Rick. I like talking to Rick Pitino. I understand he's a flawed individual, but I've never had bad dealings with him or on a personal level, I enjoy the guy. I just don't know how, as a university president, you can bring him on campus and introduce him as your head coach. It's just, you know, these, you know, what we're going to find out here is maybe athletic directors are going to lose their jobs over, I mean, well, hell, one already did, Tom Jurich at Louisville. Like, he lost his job by standing by Rick Pitino. That's essentially what cost Tom Jurich his job this week. I don't know why any other athletic director would put himself in that position.
Gary, we could go on, and we will again, I'm sure, at another time. And I appreciate you jumping on, talking about this stuff, and it was good to finally get you on the pod. I know you'll be back again here soon.
I hope so. And anytime you need me, I'm here because God knows I bother you for radio interviews every other week. So whatever you ever need from me, just send me the text and I'll jump on.
Thanks, Gary. Talk to you soon, man.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, Gary Parrish of CBS Sports. Remember, you can subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of this show wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your shows. You can also hear the Woj Pod every Wednesday and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. I'd also like to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Spotify. Be sure to support Spotify the way they support us here at the Woj Pod. We'll catch you next time.